Welcome to Centenary Walk 3, and this morning we're walking with Sarah. Sarah is a former director of a large blue chip organisation, and she left PAYE employment to start her own business. Right now she's an adoptive mum to two sibling children. Sarah describes the change as immediate, going from a high level commercial role, managing a team of senior managers with responsibility for multi-million pound budgets, to being a full-time mother in a matter of weeks. Her story is one of multiple transitions, challenges and transformative relationships.
Wow, how does that sound as an introduction?
What do you think when I introduce you like that?
I know, it's it goes back in time to those days when I was in control, I think is the word I would probably use. I could plan, I knew what was happening. I could take every day, and I had a fantastic team who worked for me, and we worked together really well and closely, of course, as I did with you for some of that, to a life now that has so many different challenges every day.
Yeah.
And one where two little children who very much decide what is going to happen each day. And no real control. And I think that is probably the biggest challenge that I faced, from having control of a team, knowing which direction we were going in, what everybody was working on, and the various challenges that were thrown up to us every day. But being able to look ahead and to clearly see where that was going to take us to, whereas now, it can change by the minute with two very determined children.
Yeah.
And all their expectations on you and what you need to do. Sometimes it can be very exhausting. Our first child came when she was just 9 months old, and we went through a rigorous process with the adoption processes. Very challenging, really, to your relationship and to also to your family upbringing and how you were brought up. So
is that down to the scrutiny of all of that?
Yes, there's a lot of questions that you need to answer, and a lot of soul searching as well as to whether this is the right thing for you both to venture into, the challenges that that can bring along the way with a child who possibly has trauma from a very young age. I mean, we were of the opinion that if we adopted them young enough and as babies, then we would be able to influence them right from the way go. Nature, nurture, and it would all be our way. But unfortunately, even when they're in the womb, there's a lot of things that a baby encounters that we really didn't understand and get our heads around until probably seeing it firsthand. You know, it's always a textbook in front of you being told that, but once you actually experience it firsthand, then you start to understand.
From the work perspective, it's much easier, if this is the right word, much more visible that somebody's pregnant and about to go on maternity leave.
Yeah.
In the case of adoption, that declaration of intent through, and at a time where actually you were in a very senior role, there's an expert, I guess. There's an expectation that you weren't going to do that, and therefore you were there.
Yeah, for the long haul.
For the long haul.
Yeah, and I think that it was a confidential time, really, you know, because you're never quite sure how the process is all going to span out. And as much as they give you a timeline, things can still happen that can change the situation. You know, an adopted child has still very much they're investigating family members and, you know, the possibility of the child still remaining within the family in some way or another. So while ever you identify the child as being the right child for you and for you to take her, you know, on board as your family, there's still investigations going on about other family members who may be capable of taking that child in and being able to look after them. So as much as it's on the back of your mind that, you know, this is something that's going to happen, there are still quite a few what-ifs along the way.
Yes.
And I think I didn't particularly want to share all of that with everybody. And I think, you know, it was all going on in the background. My line manager at the time was aware of the situation, but it didn't really go any further than that for us to discuss. And it was announced quite nicely, really, and I think a lot of people were almost amazed to think that I was going to do that. You know, I think they saw me as the career lady and off I was going, you know, and that was the path I'd chosen. And particularly when you're getting slightly older, people are more like, oh gosh, you know, you're going to go down baby route now, you know.
Yes.
How do you feel about that? And, you know,
it's a brave thing, really.
Yes. It was a very brave thing, and I think it was met with some people, you know, were almost like, well, I never expected you to do that. But some people, I was leaving the business at the end of that week, you know.
Yes.
There wasn't any
no,
further.
No, it's not like the build-up to a maternity leave.
No, there was no evidence of what was going to happen, you know, when I left the company. And there was a bit of discussion about whether I actually wanted to say anything about the adoption. We decided that it was good to be open about it. It was quite interesting, you know, when you're going to sort of play mornings with the children. I found that quite a challenge because a lot of the mums who were there had had children and been to NCT classes together, so there was real sort of, you know, these
people looking for birth stories.
Yeah, and almost, you know, when I turned up with two young children, they were almost like, oh, where did you go to NCT? You know, where were you? And, you know, almost like, gosh, I don't remember seeing you at any of the NCT groups. And it was quite awkward, really, for me, because I was thinking, crikey, I'd never really thought about this, but
yes.
You know.
And was that prepared? So in terms of the adoption process, were you sort of helped or given any guidance on how to navigate your way through some of those situations?
Not really. To be honest, I think a lot of the time that you're given on those courses is all about, you know, this child entering into your family and, you know, really understanding the child, the background that may come with that child. How you can manage that, and there wasn't a whole lot of the day-to-day, you know, the real of it all. You know, this is real life. Well, this child arrives with you from probably the foster parents come and bring the child. You have an engagement for 2 weeks where you basically go and meet the child at the foster home or wherever they're in care, and you start to slowly integrate, and those hours grow longer. But it's 2 weeks. 2 weeks of you being with this child that you're going to spend the rest of your life with, and understanding, you know, their needs and how their routine works. And
yeah. And the pressure on those 2 weeks.
Yes.
And was that 2 weeks where you were still working, or had you finished by that point?
Well, I chose to finish before we got to that stage, and I'm very glad I did, because to be honest, sometimes you're actually going to these meetings. They can be a night time, they can be an early morning, so you'd go and actually wake the child, you know, sort of be there when they woke up in the morning.
That's really interesting, isn't it? Because those of us not in the know would make an assumption you might meet them in the morning.
Yeah, no.
But not thinking about, but part of getting to know the child is the routine of how does the morning look like?
Yep.
What does the evening bedtime look like?
Yep.
Because the need for consistency, safety, psychological safety,
of
a pattern
of life. The security
of,
and the smells of you, you know, so you have to make sure that you are sort of, we were sleeping with little blankets that they had or toys that they had, so that our scent became, you know, sort of familiar to them, really, within the foster home. This new scent was appearing, you know, which was sort of, you know, the two of us, you know.
Yes.
So that was transferred across to them. They became to understand, you know, who we were. There was pictures all around the foster home of us, so that they were familiar with what we looked like, you know, and slowly introducing yourselves to them that way. And then, but that's, you know, a hard 2 weeks of driving, because sometimes, you know, we were, I think for our first child, we were driving all the way over to the other side of Leeds, and then the other side of Bradford. So it was, you know, it's really quite
Yes.
Quite a challenge on your time and exhausting, you know, emotionally as well, because all you want to do really is just be there for them all the time, you know.
Yes.
Coming away from them when that, you know, you're getting more and more attached to them, and having to leave them with the other family because it's not quite at that level yet, you know, and they're assessing you and making sure that, you know, it's all going according to plan. That day comes and arrives very quickly where the foster parents bring the child with all of the things that they've had, and there they are, you know, sat on your rug at home looking at you and going, you know, hello mummy and daddy.
Yeah.
And you're almost like, right, okay, so
this is it.
And every day, you know, you sort of develop more and more attachment of, you know, what they like, what they don't like. And the first couple of weeks are really for you to spend getting to know them. So the family members are encouraged to sort of keep away, really, because it's a time when that bond, you know, between you and the child is formed.
Yes.
Properly, because throwing too many people in their faces at that beginning point can be quite confusing again for them. So it's very much a lockdown time of just, you know, three or four of us really getting to understand each other and spending time together. And then, but it's amazing how they adapt so quickly, you know.
Yes.
And how you do, you know.
Yes, all of a sudden they're there and you can't imagine
yeah,
without them.
No. And you suddenly become a family.
How important is it to combine work and parenting? Or has becoming a parent changed your approach?
Gosh. Well, I think it's a hard question because I'm probably very lucky because I could do, you know, I didn't need to go back to work. It wasn't a necessity for me to go back. And I think going back to the job that I had before would have been a real challenge. You know, I don't know how I could have done that part-time, because I don't think I'd have particularly wanted to go back full-time.
Yeah.
I'd have wanted to be there to be able to experience, you know, child growing up, you know, and see those times.
Like any other mum?
Yes, yeah. Like any other mum.
And I just wonder sometimes if there's an expectation around, in an adoption scenario, that there is more pressure to not return to the workplace because this is a much wanted baby child, you know, so therefore what, you know, you probably shouldn't be going back, shouldn't,
yes,
so, you know, the unspoken words are you shouldn't go back to work, and yet why wouldn't you, when actually the vast majority of households now are two income households, and actually we get something from being at work that we don't necessarily get from being at home.
Absolutely. And I think a lot, when I speak to a lot of parents who are back at work, whether that's part-time or full-time, a lot of it comes back that it's almost that time for you again, you know. It's just a different, you're a different person. It's a completely different conversation, you know, strategic conversations, and, you know, so you switch off.
Yes.
And you go into the other zone where you were before, which they, you know, a lot of people, a lot of mums, I've said, oh yeah, I couldn't do what you do, you know. It's great being able to go back, you know, and just have a bit of time where I'm just me again, you know. It's almost a switch your work button on again.
When you're in an employment situation, you have the discipline of, hopefully, regular meetings with your line manager or updates, where there's somebody else engaging the conversation with you about what next, what's possible.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden that framework's gone. And the person you're having the conversation with is yourself. Mm-hmm. So there's nobody saying, oh, your appraisal's due in 3 months' time.
No.
Make sure you're on top of your...
No. And there's nobody there geeing you on and going, well done, you did a great job, you know.
Yeah.
That changing that nappy, well done, because, God, that was a smelly one. You know, there's nothing... It's like, you're on it by yourself. There's nobody who... You have this little voice inside your head that's either giving you good encouragement or doubting you, you know.
Yeah.
And
you
like
have to
dig
deep as a parent, don't you?
Yes. Yes. And you have some really low days as well where you just feel like, does anybody appreciate me? you know, and I'd like to change my name from mother to maid. But, you know, and you do have those days where you feel down. And like you say, it is lonely. But I think it's really important that you build that network. And it was hard for me because I hadn't gone through the natural progression of, you know, so.
But you have a network of fellow adoptive families.
Yes, we do. And, you know, that was always really helpful to start with because it's a challenge to keep in touch with everybody because you're all so busy with your own children. You know, it's hard, but you have to invest that time in, you know, do you know what, I really need to just reach out and give somebody a shout now.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of understanding that you have because people know those challenges that you're facing because they're going through them as well, you know, and it's almost even just to somebody to say, I know, he's doing the same thing or she did the, you know, and you go, oh, thank goodness, it's not just me.
Yes. Everybody take away else. That sense of isolation.
Yeah, of loneliness, you know, I mean, some days, don't you, you're just sitting in the house and the children are in riot or, you know, they're not well and you're almost like, gosh, this is, you know, really hard work. But a text from somebody going, I know how you feel, you know, smiley emoji and we can, you know, we can do it and I'm there too, you know, I'm here if you need me and a phone call and then you're back on track again.
And I was really interested to do these walks because it felt to me like we're all on this journey, but some people just managed to just do that bit more. A bit like you're describing, you know, why you're starting the playgroup.
Which is preschool.
The preschool.
Yeah.
The giving back, the finding some way to add something becomes so much more important. And you know, Millicent Fawcett campaigned for 60 years. Mm. I cannot imagine having the tenacity, the gumption to keep going at it for 60 years, whatever that 60 years looked like. We are women, we are wives, daughters, sisters, mothers of girls.
Yeah.
What are our hopes for that next generation?
It's a challenging one because it's encouraging them to do their best, you know, and I think, and that comes down to, you know, school and what the school is like and how supportive they are of your child. We have our challenges with our children because, you know, there are issues, there's developmental issues that are, you know, at play really.
Yes.
And that means that the school has to step up and do things differently and maybe invest funding into supporting the child.
I mean, you know, I think we get through life by being inspired by people. Mm. One of my questions was, who are the people that inspire you to do more, do your best, just move forward through difficult times?
Yeah. I think that Jane Tomlinson I will always admire her. I think she was amazing because of, you know, I went through the experience of breast cancer and so did she, and she had a very young family and she was taken so when they were so young, you know, but yet her determination and drive and still continues through her husband. You know, and she's a local lass.
Yeah.
And you know, amazing. So she always is in the back of my mind. I think when things get tough, I think, gosh,
yeah,
I'm here, you know, I can make a difference still. And you know, she was a mum, and she fought, you know, she fought so hard and did so much, you know, for the charity. And I think, you know, that she always is in the back of my mind for, you know, what she overcame and how she battled through so well.
Yeah.
And then, you know, I mean, I admire women who go back to work and go back, you know, and balance that. And I, you know, we are all an inspiration to each other in some ways. You know, I find I can talk to quite a few people who I think, gosh, you know, how do you manage to do everything that you do? You know, shift working mums who aren't around at weekends, you know, who are working in hospitals or, you know, and don't have that time with the children when they're at school. You know, their weekend's taken up with working, you know, but they're dedicated to the cause.
And who are the people you want to thank?
Well, I think it's definitely a family. You know, I had a solid, I mean, my, you know, parents, I was lucky they were solid. They brought me up with traditions and, you know, values, and showed me the path, really. And I think that that's really important, you know, that you can look up to those family members around you and think, right, what, you know, do I want to be, you know, take those little bits from each of them and build yourself into the person that you are.
Yeah.
And friendship, you know, that network of friends who are from so many different life experiences. Mm.
So if you had advice for for people in an adoptive situation,
yeah,
about combining work and parenting, taking on adoptive children, mm, what would it be?
I think it's very much you need to really think about what you want to do. So don't think that your life as you have it now is going to continue, because it's not. It's going to be very different. You're taking on a family, you know, a family that are probably going to have some issues, which you're going to have to face and deal with, you know. So you're going to need a support network that can be behind you, you know, all the time. You're going through various different challenges. And I think you have to think about, you know, career and how you want your job life to look like and how you want your home life to look like. And as long as you can talk to your employers about the challenges that you're going to face, and they are open and willing to engage on that journey with you, then that's fantastic.
Yeah.
But the problem is, at the moment, there's not much understanding of what adoption is unless you've actually been through it yourself.
What would you want organisations to do better in terms of sorting themselves out?
I think they need to listen a bit more, to be honest, you know, to the people that they've got who have been through it. You know, I mean, it's like we were saying, you know, there's huge experience and skill base within an organisation. And, you know, you have to listen to those people to be able to understand how each person has been, you know, affected or...
Yeah.
Has, you know, so for me, it's... You've got all the tools in your business that will tell you what works, what doesn't work. But I think you've got to be true. You've got to be true to yourself as well, with what you can actually do. You know.
You mean as an individual, not overplay your card.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's an interesting point.
Because it's, you know.
You mean we overcommit? So.
Well, yeah, I do. I do think we do, because you know we really want to go back in, you know, you want to get to that next level, or you don't, you know, you want to keep doing what you were doing before, but yet there are, you know, there's a family there, isn't there? And I think the employers can only do what they can do to support you if they know what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, so it's incumbent on us to make the request, to ask, to have a conversation, because it's not necessarily the case that the organisation will be coming to you to inquire. If they're not going to come to you, you need to go and feel confident or seek out somebody to help you begin the conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. Again.
Part of my ambition for doing these walks was to talk to people about the F word, feminism.
Yes.
And I've been really interested in people's reaction to, because the Fawcett Society is a feminist society, and people's reaction to that as a term, that as a notion, whether it's a capital F or a lowercase f, people struggle with it. And I'm interested to know, what do you think about the whole thing?
I think some people are just scared of it, you know.
Because the conversations are what?
Yeah, because they just think it's a fighting term.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean?
Some of aggression.
Yeah, some people perceive feminism as they're out, you know, on the rallying path.
But we wouldn't be standing having this conversation now without some people fighting.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that it's important that we continue to battle. It made me quite angry when you think about a business, you know, like the BBC, and they had to publicise themselves as being unfair on, you know.
Yes.
It was almost like, that's shocking, you know, for that to have been exposed in that sort of an organisation was almost like, that's just unbelievable. How have you let it get to that? So.
But the BBC is not untypical in any more organisations.
No.
And the fact that that equal pay, the data is now on in the public domain, gives people an opportunity to look at it and question and ask.
Yeah. Absolutely,
how has that
the
happened?
Tools, yeah. But it's a shame, isn't it, that it has to come to something like that. You know what I mean? And that's when you think, that's when the rally cry goes, because you think, no, that's just unfair.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing more than it's just unfair.
And this is the point for me about why I'm talking to parents while I'm doing these walks. That in preparing that future generation, you know, by the work that we do, the conversations we have, the campaigns we support, we're helping to change things for our offspring and other people's.
Yeah,
and it's not just a girl thing, that actually if we get this right for women, I think we get it right for everybody.
Yeah, well, it's fairness, isn't it? You know, I mean, it's just, you know, why we're all saying that we're all inclusive, we're all, you know, we're as one almost, you know, and you're then thinking, well, why are these things that are separating us out then, you know?
But it's those small practices. I think this is the point. So even organisations like the BBC will have a policy around diversity and inclusion and equal pay. You know, the Equal Pay Act came into force, but it's not about the visible stuff. It's about the little subtle things that happen that mean that people make choices and decisions. Employers about what's possible for somebody returning back from parental leave, the person coming back who feels they can't continue their career or they've got to sacrifice their family in service of their career, that they can't have both.
Yeah.
And I think it's one of those classic issues that people say, you know, oh, you know, you can't have it all. I don't think you can have it all. I think something, we talked earlier, something that always be a level of compromise as a working parent.
Yeah.
And if we're choosing to become parents and to continue work, it's going to be, it's hard yards, but that's where you do it in partnership, hopefully with somebody else.
Yeah.
And it's not just something that women have to shoulder, because that's where we get ourselves in a situation of impacting pay visibly that makes a difference.
Yeah.
So thank you for walking with me today and sharing your thoughts and insights. And I think it's so important that we hear the voices of just people with true experiences and insights and inspiration.
I'm so happy that you've asked me to do it. It's been a pleasure.